Getting Things Done: Life Without a GUI by Jared Bernard, October 9th, 2009, at the Utah Open Source Conference. This recording was a little rough. I cleaned it up the best I could. Let me know if it was worth listening to. I might be able to come up with another one for your enjoyment. Let me know. This is Kuvmo, kuvmo@gmail.com, kuvmo@identica. All right. Enjoy. Thank you. Bye.
My name is Jared Bernard. This is my first time presenting, so I'm a little nervous. And I'm a little nervous too because just recently I had some hardware problems that totally had to rebuild this presentation and the applications I was showing. So things might be a little rough, and so that's a little disclaimer. I want to give you one thing, being the text being so small, so I'm sorry for you guys in the back of this presentation. But any of the slides will be available later on the website or something like that, I think it said. So anyway, so you can get these a little later. I'll just introduce myself a little bit and what I do. I've been using Linux for about 8 years now, since 2001. And I'm just a desktop user. I'm not a developer at all. I'm not a sysadmin or anything like that. I just do stuff that more people do every day on the computer. And, but I fell in love with the command line and with SSH. I had this one job where I kind of automated a few things, and the job got done a little quicker, and I had some extra time. I'm like, hey, I want to check my personal email. I wonder if there's a way I can do that at home with an email client. And that led to using Drive and Alpine. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. It led to seeing what else could I do through SSH on the command line remotely. And so this kind of developed into this great passion for the command line. And so hopefully you'll get something out of this presentation. I'm actually surprised one or two people showed up, so for this. Another disclaimer is that I'm going to be accessing the frame buffer a little bit, and if some of the frame buffer won't translate over to the projector here, so that's why I kind of have my laptop turned around. I'll just have to hold up until I see it does work, and I'll go from there, so I have to excuse me for that as well. So I'll begin here. Let me walk around here. I have some rough notes. Sorry, excuse me for turning my back on you a few times, but I feel like this is kind of the best setup here. So why use the command line? And there's a few reasons why we want to use the command line. And when we're talking today, we're going to be talking about using the command line at your desktop environment. You know, get rid of that GUI, get rid of KDE, GNOME, get rid of even Flexbox. That's too bloated, right? We just want to use the command line. And some reasons listed up there is King is definitely faster. And sometimes going through menu systems that are several layers deep. Commands are usually standard. Some of these unit commands have been around, what, 40 years of Unix, right? For a long time. And they've stayed pretty much the same. Where GUIs have changed quite a bit over time. And so that's kind of nice. You can also automate or script a lot of commands. And it uses a lot less memory. One of the themes here is portability. I have a Pentium 1 133 running at home with Debian Lenny running, and everything I'm showing you here today, I was going to bring that, but I wasn't sure how it would work. It's kind of a heavy beast. But everything I'm going to show you today runs on that Pentium 1 133 megahertz. And so it's really kind of very resourceful. It's also more powerful, and plus it's geeky, right? Being on the command line is good geek show, right? Sorry, good. So I'm going to kind of go through these slides. I think I timed where it's about a minute a slide. I think I'm already behind. So, but I want to talk about desktop users. This is what we're going to be covering, is what desktop users do and the tools that they use to get things done. So I made a list here, I'm not going to read them directly, but a few things like word processing, there's window managers to kind of multitask a little bit, presentations, email, browse the web, social networking, calendaring, to-do list, watching movies, how to do that on the command line, videos, photo editing, file management, playing games, things like that. These are all types of things desktop users do on a day-to-day basis. And so I can't guarantee I'll get through all of these, but I'll try and hit the most important ones that I felt were most important. And hopefully share you with some applications. I do have a website that has a lot of this information on there. And it actually compares the GUI application with the command line application in, for functionality to get the same thing back. So those are some things that we'll be covering today. So why do we want to live without a GUI? Why do we want to do these things? Hopefully I'll answer those questions in this presentation. Things that we will not be covering is server administration. Like I said, I'm not a sysadmin. I don't know really how those things work at the time, and most of those things are done on the command line anyways. We won't cover any development stuff. So this is just basic desktop user things, okay? Alright, so let's talk about window managers. How do you open up multiple windows or multiple applications at the same time in the command line? The two most common, I think, tool that most people use is something called Screen. If you've been around Linux or Unix for a while, Screen's been around a long time, and it's a great tool. Unfortunately, I can start it up, but it's not too impressive to show. And I really want to cover DVTM, which I think is a great tool, and I think I have it set up here. I do. Basically, you can break up the terminal into little sections, and one thing that Screen doesn't have, there's a little add-on script I think you have, is vertical dividing. It can divide the screen up horizontally, but vertically you can't. I think there's a script out there that someone has. You kind of have to hack it or attach it or something like that to get that going. But this is very versatile. You can actually, if you use any type of tiling environment, such as like rat poison or something like that, if you're familiar with that, this is very similar. You can actually, you can move around these tiles in different ways, different formats. Maximize windows, maybe bring things back if you want. And so it's really kind of versatile. You can open up as many windows as you want. You have screen space available to do. So that's kind of the window manager, my preference that I kind of use. I guess it's window manager in quotations there. It's not technically a window manager, it doesn't have widgets and other things that you're used to. But it's a DVTM. And it's in the Debian repositories. I'm sure it's pretty common. So you can install it on most distributions. I'm moving along here, but I have a lot to talk about. Let's talk about word processing and how you manage certain document files in various type of formats that are out there, right? Especially what Microsoft just came out, Word 2007, I guess 2 years ago. With a completely different format will be, I guess it's for OOXML, the DOCX format, right? And how do you deal with those type of things? How do you deal with the doc files as well? And so we'll talk a little bit about that. How do you, if someone sends you a DOCX file, how do you edit it and then send it back to them in an editable format so that they can view it and change it and things like that? So we'll talk a little bit about that here quick, and that'll probably be the bulk of the time. And then we'll cover a few other things really quickly. This kind of describes the difference between a word processor and a text editor. I won't cover it just for lack of time. But there are some word processing tools that are out there. The first one I want to bring up is called WordGrinder. It's really nice. It's nice for just writing. If you're writing some type of report or documentation, it's great. It can save as a PDF or as XML. You can export it to those different types of formats. But it's not really good if you need to do some really fancy fonts, particularly layouts or even inserting pictures or things like that. Sometimes these modern word processors do. But it's a great tool. Otherwise, you can go old school where you have a little bit more flexibility in fonts. And we'll get into a DOS emulator called DOS Emu. And you can actually run Word. Microsoft Word 5.5, that's available for free, or if you have the old Novell Word Perfect for DOS, you can run it in that if you like, you're a bit nostalgic. But what I would recommend if you're creating personal documents is using LaTeX. Has anyone here used LaTeX before? The extended capacity? Great, because I'm not that good at it, but I can show you some examples of it and just a very basic. And basically, it uses a markup language. Most word processors do, whether it's hidden or not hidden. And you can do some very powerful things with LaTeX. And let me see if I can actually find it. Let's see if it actually got transferred over here. And it gets folded, so it should add on here. Alright, this is kind of what an example of labor. Sorry, I can't type and talk at the same time. It's up there at the top. So you see the backslash, it's very basic. This is like a simple document when you create it, and so you can kind of see some of the tags that are there that laid out. I'll kind of show you what it looks like when you convert it to a PDF. But like I said, my example wasn't very great. I probably should have come up with another one, but very, very powerful. You can use the mathematical formulas in there. Like I said, you can put pictures, set columns, particular font types. They're just crystal clear and wonderful. When you use it, it's really a powerful tool here. So let me see, I haven't even compiled this yet, so I guess that I don't know. It's already in the translation. Yeah, I can. It's so powerful. You can be converted into so many different formats and things like that. PDF, I mean, you can create some really, really beautiful PDFs. Yeah, that's a converter. There's one or two. That's one reason the print system I can download Figlet to, it's a font thing. So, because I'm having network issues too. But anyway, you basically can find there's a LaTeX to PDF script that can be run, and you can create these beautiful PDFs. And it's just beautiful. If you Google LaTeX, well, there's millions of examples out there. And I apologize for not having a lot of those, but I wanted to get some more on the managing different formats as well. But that's LaTeX. Look into it. I think I have a slide. There's some LaTeX tools that you can use on the command line if you're a Vim or an Emacs guy. I prefer Vim. LaTeX Suite is awesome. Really have some handy tools to help create these beautiful LaTeX documents. And like I said, right now you just have to make a nice document. And then OCTEX is for Emacs. If you're used to that, to help create these LaTeX documents. So let's talk about managing various document formats. All right, there's a few. Let's talk first about kind of viewing documents. So if someone sends you a document, a tool that's been out there for a long time, AntiWord, which basically can display documents, but with OOXML that came out recently, it doesn't view those. So it views the traditional doc files, that's Word 97 to 2003 or something like that. It'll display. And I can show you an example of that. I think I have a doc file. If you've never seen AntiWord, it's pretty cool. That's a Word verification problem I got, something like that. So as you can see, you can at least view a doc file in text format. I can show you what that. I'm just going to pull this up and view it as well. So just kind of see the difference. Just comparison. The formatting isn't always great, especially if there's some heavy formatting and some tables and things like that. But it seems to serve the purpose for at least viewing. What was that?
That's just outputting it as flat text. You could type that to another application, search documents, whatever.
You could, yeah. So you can grip it, you can use less, you can use, all sorts of things, which is really kind of nice. So this is what it looks like in GUI and OpenOffice. Like that, so that. Compared to. As you can see, there's some formatting issues, things like that, but at least you can read the text. And another thing that's really great, if you have PDF documents, you can use the frame buffer. We're going to be getting into frame buffer. I don't want to get too into depth actually what the frame buffer is and everything else. That's not the scope of this presentation. But FBI is a frame buffer image viewer. And you can also view PDFs as well as JPEGs and other type of image formats. And like I said, the frame buffer really doesn't work on this screen. I could pull up a PDF if you want in the frame buffer and kind of hold up a monitor, I guess. That's kind of what I'm going to be doing. I guess if you guys want to see what a PDF looks like. Well, actually, I'll forego that because actually we're kind of slipping away the time here. But because you'll be looking at some images that I'll bring up that use the same application. But the biggest thing, if you're going to be managing different document formats, you need to be looking at converters. And there's a great converter out there. AviWord is great. It'll convert on the command line any conversion that AviWord, the document word processor, can convert to and from. And then there's a few scripts out there. There's like DocX to text, PDF to text, and things like that if you need those. But the one I really want to talk about is UNOCOM. UNOCOND, and basically it grabs the converting capabilities of OpenOffice. So any type of document that can be converted through OpenOffice or opened in OpenOffice or saved as in OpenOffice is applicable to this application. And I'll show you, I'm going to run through a few of these things to show you how this works. So I have a few documents in here. So I have an ODT document, which is the open document format. I have a docx, AVIC, and a spreadsheet there. And then I just have a text document, which I'll show you. You can actually create documents using the docbook format to help create these beautiful doc files if you want. And I'll kind of show you some of those things. So first I want to show you this resume. I downloaded this resume, it's not my resume, and just kind of show you what that looks like and how we end up creating a doc file that someone else can view and edit, okay? By you creating this original text file document. So first let's look at this example and see kind of what it looks like. And like I said, some of the markup there is part of the docbook format. Google it and just look at it. It's really not that tough. This is kind of a text document that was created just in Vim. And you can see some of those in the markups and things. And I'll show you what this all ended up becoming and look like. let's get out of here. Sorry, I gotta look at my notes here. The first thing is you need to start engine. UNOCOM, I guess. And that starts the engine by with the listen option. And the first thing that we need to do is, since it's written in the docbook format, we're going to use ASCII doc to convert it to an HTML file. And then we'll see what that looks like, okay? So ASCII doc is available on most distributions. And so this will generate.
Yes.
Yeah, see, I'm not clear on that either, on what the difference is between it. Is that an ASCII book markup format? Okay. That actually makes more sense, yeah. So that's probably right. So now we should have, you should see an HTML document there. So let's see how that looks. I'll pull up here in the browser, I'll pull up links. You see kind of what it looks like there in the format. And then I'll bring up a GUI browser here. Now you can see what it looks like here. And that's what it looks like as an HTML. All right, so now we are going to, let's see here, we'll convert it to a doc file. We're going to convert the HTML into the doc file. This just takes a second to run, and so now you see that there's a doc file there. You can use it running anti-word. So it's going to make 2 inches since it was already a text file. And you can look at it like that. Otherwise, all here, I'll open it up in OpenOffice. That's what it looks like in OpenOffice. So let's kind of have a play with, and like I said, this works with any type of documentation that OpenOffice can handle, including spreadsheets and PowerPoint presentations. Now, when we get to spreadsheets and PowerPoint presentations, formatting does break down quite a bit in some of the conversions when you convert it down to text. And putting it back into that format is a little tougher. But in word processing, it's pretty acceptable and pretty reasonable, and you can create some pretty good results from using this application. For time's sake, I'm going to skip. But so just converting this back and forth, we'll bring up these various. Let me go back to my slide too, so So this kind of gives a basic layout of how you can kind of manage that by creating an original document, I guess in that ASCII doc format. There's a website that I pulled this from, which I actually have a handout here, which if anyone's interested, which documents how to create those type of documents. And you use the ASCII doc to convert it to an HTML, and then from there you can convert it as a PDF. That's one thing I didn't do, but you kind of get the same results. I just don't want to be redundant here. And so that's kind of a way to move it back and forth. You can convert, I'll show you how to convert the doc X. It's kind of the same thing. I think I have a doc X file in here. Let me get the top again. So I have that midterm doc 1, that second document over there. I'm just going to convert it to a doc because that's easier to work with. And then just run, take a second to shoot a run here. And so now you have that as a readable doc file that you can work with that you're kind of hard to do. So, kind of nice tools. And the nice thing about being in the command line is you can create scripts to kind of automate these things if you're kind of doing the same operation over and over again. You can kind of automate a lot of this conversion back and forth and editing type things. So, that's that application. Spreadsheets is another thing. Leo is now. Which is in the office suite there. But SC has been around for quite a while. I can show you kind of what that looks like. You're creating raw spreadsheets. Just that looks like a spreadsheet. But what you can do is, I just don't have the time for it, but you can take an Excel spreadsheet file, convert it to a comma-separated value file, and then import it into CS and play with it. Now, you do lose some formatting, like I said. You lose some of the formulas that are there, but you do have the results of the formula, so at least you can read it and manipulate it if you have to read it. So that is a bit problematic when you're dealing with spreadsheets and things like that. So, and this CS has a great tutorial here. If you just hit question mark, it goes through and kind of has really great documentation to help you how to use it. It's a great tool. I've used it actually quite a bit to create some invoices and things. So I'm kind of going fast here. That's basically the process I discussed about spreadsheets. Now, presentations. There seems to be a lot more applications there to create presentations. The program I'm using here, and like I said, sorry about the fonts, is called TPP. And basically, it's just a text file that you create that displays this. You can do a lot of fancy things. You can do some animations too, which I was going to add, but with some of my hardware issues, we didn't have time to actually get to that. And you can use Figlet, if you're familiar with Figlet on the command line, which can do some cool ASCII artish type big fonts and things like that, so you can do as well. And some of the animations are pretty clever and pretty neat. Anyway, so that's what I use, is TPP. That's what this is. It is an ncurses program. It uses ncurses to display the application. But you can use LaTeX to create beautiful PDF slides. And there's an application out there called Beamer, which uses LaTeX and compiles LaTeX to create these beautiful things. And it's a little easier than using just a raw text editor or something to create. So those are some applications to create presentations. Again, you can use that, you know, Conf or whatever it's called, sorry, I don't know that, but to convert PowerPoint presentations around in different formats if you want. The best thing probably if you want to view a PowerPoint presentation is to convert it over to a PDF and then view it in FrameWrapper, which I'll show you how to do that a little later. That's presentations, email. I want to show you some email. So that's kind of the Office application suites that we cover, and that's what a lot of people use for the desktop applications. But for email, kind of the two big ones is Mutt. A lot of the geeks really like Mutt. I'm not a big Mutt guy. I prefer Alpine, which is the open source version, or the free version of Pine, which was developed by the University of Washington. And it's a great application. I don't have internet access here, so I don't know. Get that working, so I'm not sure how well it works. The thing I like about Alpine is that it has an STMP server built into it, or might have to have that application separately and configure that. And it's just a pain to set up, at least if you're kind of just an average Joe user like I am. Usually say it's trying to search for my folder list, but it's not even connected to my IMAP server. So, but it's a great application. There is kind of a quick and dirty way to use Mutt to at least view your files. But like I said, I don't have internet connection, so I can't really show that to you because it just puts the raw files. But anyway, this is Alpine. It's very menu-oriented. You go into different applications to set up. It's really easy to improve the searching. Great tools. You can configure attachments to be viewed by all the applications that we talked about. So if you receive a doc file, you can have AntiWord immediately open up that doc file. You can write scripts that you can point that to automatically convert docx files if you want. You can instigate the frame buffer imager to view pictures that come, things like that. And Mutt is just as adaptable as well. It's a great application. The configuration of these applications really isn't part of this course. I just want to introduce you to different applications that are out there for that. And also, I wanted to mention, if you have Gmail, eLinks, the web browser eLinks, works great for web-based Gmail. If you want to use that, works great.
What was that?
eLinks, E-L-I-N-K-S. With the web browsers, it kind of gets a little confusing because all mean links. And this is the internet browsers. There's links, kind of the old school one is links is in the animal, L-Y-N-X. And then there's links, which I prefer, L-I-N-K-S, such as chain links. And I like e-links, which is built off the first links. And there's several others out there. There's I think Emacs has one, W-E-C or something like that. And like I said, I stick with links. It's pretty good. If you need to see web page with graphics, and like I said, I can't pull this up now. I was going to pull up Google Images. You use Links2 with the G option, and you can view JPEGs and graphics using the frame buffer. And I wish I could pull up the website. Well, you might be able to see it on the display here. Now, watching YouTube videos, I'll show you how to do that. There's an application called YouTube Downloader, and it's just YouTube-DL, the downloader. And basically, all you need to do to get an application is you need to get the URL of the application. You can use links to go and just kind of search the description. Even though it's all in text mode, Flash doesn't work. As long as you get the URL, if you're in links, you just hit the equal sign, and that brings up the URL of that page. And then you basically type in the command, YouTube DL, the URL, and it will download that Flash video file. Now, I've already done that. You can't do it because of the lack of internet connection here. And what happens is, you kind of see that maroon and that purplish one over there. It formats it, you know, this weird file name. I don't know what it calls it, but you can see the FLV file that's there that automatically downloads onto your system. And so once you have that Flash file, you can play it in a media player such as MPlayer. I'm going to show you how to do that. Again, that uses the frame buffer and the SDL libraries. And that's not going to work on the projector, but I'll try and hold up my monitor here so you can kind of see how that works. But I want to cover videos in general, not that I need to do it. There's three libraries that you can use to view videos on the command line. And there's the ALIP library, which basically is ASCII video. And then there's, I think it's called the Kaka library, C-A-C-A. And that's kind of a colored ASCII, and I'll show you I'll demonstrate each one of these. And then the one I like to use is the SDL library to do videos. And you can use VLC, you can use MPlayer, you can use Xvine. They all have command line options to be able to use these in the frame buffer. So let's first watch this YouTube video. And like I said, this is going to go blank here as I'm pulling out the virtual terminal to run these things in the frame buffer. So I'll kind of hold up my laptop for those in the back, if you want to see it here. So first, I'll play this. Let me play media first before we get Flash. I want to show you the different libraries here. This is first the ALIP library. Okay, and this is an MPEG-4 video. This is the Bourne Identity in that movie. Let me see if I can get something there. And further back, the auto priority is actually there, but when you're up here in front, it doesn't seem really to do much. Or if anyone can even tell what that is. No, I mean, you can kind of make out people and things like that. It doesn't work very well. So I'll show you the other libraries here. Now this is the Kaka library. And we'll come up with that name here. What's
that person for a
job? The AA library. We kind of see the universal sign in there. I know it's a laptop, so angling is kind of important. You really can't see much. I don't know if there's a glare on the window or anything either, so sorry about that. But here, this is the best result, is what you get with the SDL library. And you know, I like the fifth element, so I'll shift it up again. And this is an AVI file. Obviously, you have to have the appropriate codecs. Let's get to an interesting part of the movie. You see that? You see it there in the back? Now, that's pretty watchable, isn't it? Isn't that still like, I don't know if I'm tilting this right, or you can kind of see that, and you can hear the sound and the plan, and it's pretty good. So you do the same thing with the flash video, and I'll play that too, just so you can see it, to show that you really can play flash. So here's the flash video, the YouTube video that I downloaded using the YouTube downloader. Well, I figured how to show the world my position. Anyway. And like I said, I have a Pentium 1 133 at home with 64 megabytes of RAM that can play these videos perfect without skipping. All using the SDL library. It's pretty awesome. The command line shot, it's basically M player, then it's dash VO, and that brings up the library. I don't know what the trigger is on that. And then I type in the library. So if it's the AA, I just type in the AA. Okay. If it's SDL, you just type in SDL, and then the file. And that's pretty much it. So it's pretty straightforward. Like I said, all this is scriptable and everything else. So let me get back to... So that's how you watch movies in the command line. Pretty cool. I thought that was pretty awesome. Like I said, this will work for almost anything. Let's look about talking about photos. First, viewing photos is the FBI, the frame buffer image viewer. You can also view PDFs with this as well. And you can also edit images. I don't know how extensively, I'm not really familiar with Photo, but Image Magic. It's pretty powerful, and you can do some really cool things. And they have several different options. If you look up the documentation for that, it's really amazing what you can do with the scripting language and using that to edit documents. So let's look up FBI to see what photos look like. And again, I'm going to have to go back into the frame buffer here. So the frame buffer, if no one knows, that most distributions initiated by default in the distribution, a few of them, blacklisted, and so you have to comment it out. But if you basically Google it in your distribution and frame buffer, it'll show you how to activate it. Usually you have to go into grub and edit the kernel line, and I think it's VGA equals whatever resolution you want. The options is usually how you get into the frame buffer to do some of those things. So then with the FBI, I'm going to look at some images here. So this is the frame buffer images, the images. Pretty crystal clear. I mean, this is a 1024 by 768 resolution. And you can zoom out, you can zoom in. I opened up everything in this directory. So it just goes through everything that was in that directory. Here, man, we're running out of time. So there's not much more here. How about listening to music? Music is all, we've got to listen to music, right? So here are a few applications that play music. My favorite's at the top, and we'll see. We'll play it. Since we only have like a few minutes here, I'll just show you how it works. You can create playlists and things like that. You guys hear AC/DC going? Anyway, that's how it goes. It's pretty cool. It's good for large music collections and things like that. So, music player, there's a billion music players out there for the command line. And you obviously have to have the right codecs. music. Let's see, what else? Burning CDs and DVDs. CD Record has been around a long time. It's a great application. We've built a lot of front ends for it. One of my favorites there is Mind Bash Burn. Kind of uses curses and kind of the menu system, so you don't have to remember all the switches and options and the command for CD Record. Great, just kind of simplistic type of application. Bring it up with a header install, I guess. Now gaming, let's talk about gaming here, and we'll kind of finish off on that, because everyone likes playing games.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Okay, good. So games here, BSD Games. I love BSD Games. They've kind of been around for a while, and they have a lot of these text and text games. They're in there. A few of them I listed there. They have Monopoly, Boggle, Hangman, you know, Snake, Tetris, things like that. So I can show you a few of those here. A few other ones, NetHack. NetHack has been around for before I was born, probably. And the new chest, MindMan, which is a Pac-Man clone, Moon Vikings. I'll show you a few of those. And then I'll show you how to play Quake, which is kind of a more action game. So let me show you some of the BSD games. Like this is Hangman. Just type Hangman, let's install. And there it is, you get the letters. I'm not. Okay. Then let's do the Tetris. There's Tetris. Kind of just little rinky-dinky games that have been for a while. Let's see. We'll try Moon Buggy. I kind of like Moon Buggy. Jump over these craters on the moon. That'll keep you busy for hours, right? All right. Well, let's get into Alright, if you go on my website, there's several ASCII ways to ASCII where kind of that is very hard to look at. There's also a way to do it in SDL, using SDL library, similar to the video stuff. But I prefer using a DOS emulator, just because the game is built for DOS, basically. And there's a lot of cool DOS games that are out there. Most of them are free. You can find them on the internet and be able to play with them. So I'll kind of show you how to do that. Again, we have to use the SDL library, so this is going to go away to be able to show that. But the DOS simulator that I use is DOSEMU, and it runs free DOS, and it's just really cool. If you want to pull it up in the SDL library, use the dash capital S trigger to pull up the SDL library. So that's what I'll be doing. And so, let me see here. I'll just pull it up to show you the input that I can click Quake. There's Quake playing. You guys have had enough on the ambulance drive. But like I said, any of those old DOS games that are fun to play, you can play in this DOS simulator, whatever else, it's pretty cool, and you can kill all the aliens you want. Things that I think are really interesting that you can do that we just don't have time to go over. There's file management, MC. I love MC. There's a like a million others out there. I just use NCM and Robert's and all the others. Doing file management, similar to the old Norton Commander. Remember back in the DOS, the Unwinded days, you know, we have two panels on each side. Looks great, but looks like a board up here. File management, let's see here. A bunch of social networking things. You can blog. Charm, I hear, is really good. I've never used it. I don't do too much blogging. I do have a blog that you look at. I haven't updated it in months. Twitter and Identica are there. There's several scripts out there. You can actually write your own. There's tutorials on there using curl and how to write your own scripts for these APIs, various social networking applications. If you're into Last.fm and music, Shell.fm is a great program if you have a Last.fm account. You can even use Facebook and update your status on Facebook using that FB command script. And so you can do that on the command line as well. And you can do other people's updates on Facebook as well. I know that's kind of a big hot thing right now. And Second Life, even. I've never played Second Life, but you can use the chat client in that to be able to communicate with Second Life on the command line. So all the social networking stuff are covered. And actually, I've used a lot of the GUI clients for Twitter and for Identica. There have always been problems, and I really didn't like them. And I'm just on the command line now. And I just use these command line clients. And it's so easy to query the text, or if I'm looking for a certain person, a friend, or comment. And just grip it, and it's just so nice to be able to search, because this information just seems to be pumped at you on the social networking sites. So those are a few options there. For Google, for calendaring and scheduling, GCalClean is great. I use it all the time. It was a Google Summer of Code project, and it's just amazing. And you can pull up multiple calendars. My wife has a calendar. I have one. My wife created one for my kids. It's all their schedule. And I can view all of those. And I can filter them. And I can pull up any date I want. And I can, and you can use it in like a matrix where it actually draws it out with boxes and squares. Or otherwise, you can just get a list. There's a script for it if you want to put it in Conky. So you have your calendar appointments listed there for Conky for the next few days, things like that. If you're into that and stuff like that. There's also CalCurse, which is kind of a curses type of calendaring system, which is more traditional. I think I have that. So it looks like that. You can navigate the calendar and put in your phone. Obviously, I don't have anything in there. Things like that. So it seems to be really easy to use. Say a few other things, to-do lists, task managers, the old school text file, the to-do script, bash script is great. ICOG I used for a long time. It's written in Python and has some great search options and capabilities and categorizing and prioritizing certain things and just searching by categories and priorities and things like that. It's really powerful. And TaskWire, I've actually been in contact with the developer of TaskWire, and a really good guy. He saw his project on my website, and I'm in contact with him. I haven't been able to use it yet, but it's written in Python as well. It seems to be a pretty good application as well. And there's a billion to-do lists and things like that out there. All right, finance, accounting. There's Ledger and CLIA. I think that's what you want to say. CL, command line, accounting, ACCT. And I've used Ledger. Ledger's great. To query, I've been able to use it to query my GNU cache files. So if you use GNU cache at all, you can read that those compressed files and then query it. It's really a powerful thing. To actually make entries, it's a little tougher, but I use it just for querying. And then you can use online, you can even do online banking. You can do transferring and pull down your banking files. To check with and stuff with MBank Clean, with them as well. All right, there's ABook if you're looking for address books, which is really nice. I actually just copied this script. It's a grip script that searches a delimiter of 3 pound signs. lines, and that's the way I divide up my contacts. So I'll show you that, but I think that's pretty cool here. So basically what I have is just a basic text file called addresses. So I can't talk about it. Okay, so basically it's a text file, and we'll copy down these phone numbers, they won't be on the show here. And see, everything's delimited by those three pound signs. And so now it's just really easy. You have a grip. I'll just show you grips. There it is. One line of awk. I guess it's awk, yes. I'm looking at it. Yeah, it's been a long time. And basically, all it does is looks for that delimiter of the 3 pound sign. So when I want to look up an address, so I just do contact Danny. And it pulls up anything Danny. Any in that file. So I can search my phone, I can search my email, I can let me look for Bernard. What's my last name? So everyone with the last name Bernard automatically. It's so nice to just copy and paste from an email, using a text file, or copy and paste from a website, or whatever. Do these contacts. So, alright. I think I got one more slide. No, that's not taking my. Some other things you can do, genealogy, math, astronomy. You can use your webcam, password keepers, voice over IP, obviously IRC, scanning, vector drawing. All these things can be done on the command line. Alright, questions? Anyone?
What's the name of the address one?
Which one? The one I showed you with the script?
Yeah, just that simple address one I'm just showing
you. It's really just a self-created thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The script. Yeah. So it's not, I think it's actually on my website, I think. If not, I can put it on there.
What is your website?
CLI.homelinux.net. There are some forms you should go over to print out a few of the things that I cover if you're interested in websites. Where to get Word 5.5 DOS if you want to go back and get that available for free from Microsoft. Any other applications? Any other questions?
Real quick one on the first one you did in the training type program. How hard is it to get to know the
It's like anything else. It took me probably 5-10 minutes once I learned again, because I only really wanted to know 5 or 6 of them, how to create a new window, how to move them around, and how to maximize one and minimize one. Yeah. So, any other questions? At all? I know I kind of blew through this, but I appreciate you guys coming. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.